Chris Skinner's Countryside Podcast with Matthew Gudgeon.
It's a wet old morning on High Ash Farm, the rain falling on the roof of Chris Skinner's pickup truck, and we've come to a lovely part of the farm next to the successional woodland to start another Countryside Podcast. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, Matthew. Welcome to a very soggy High Ash Farm.
I'm going to close the window here.
Yes, it's a good idea. Handbrake's on because we're on the side of a hill facing down into one of the valleys of the farm, and successional woodland to our right and Fox's Grove, about 30 acres of mature woodland in front.
And the successional woodland is so called because it plants itself.
There's been no human planting in that at all, and it's my pride and my delight, sort of the best area on the farm. It's full of kind of hope. Young trees, many about 20 feet tall, have all put themselves there, and there was a crop of grass there. It was set aside grassland and very tussocky, and just left it because I could see the odd oak sapling coming up, which the jays had taken the acorns out there. And then we had some big winds. There's ash trees in front of us, and the ash keys blew off into the woodland from a northerly wind. And then there was a big westerly gale the same year, and big clumps of Scots pine on our left, which is on Caister Park, and it blew the seeds out of the pine cones, very light papery seeds, and they blew over into the middle. Perhaps they went 200-300 yards through the air and landed in the tussocky grass and dropped down and germinated. And it's 5 acres, 2 hectares of the most glorious woodland you could imagine. Anyway, this morning's mission is a little bit different. We're going to be looking at, well, it's probably winter flowers still, because we're still in winter, but I like to call them spring, because it sort of raises your spirits on a wet day. So if we hop out of the truck, I'm just going to walk over here a little bit with you, and we'll start to enjoy some of the delights you might find in spring. And I've brought one of the listeners' questions here with me, and I'll fold it up for the moment to keep it dry. So,
what about keeping me dry?
Well, we'll dry you later in front of a good log fire.
Sounds good. Stream's running well there?
Yes, it's pouring down through the farm. This is one of the feeder streams, Matthew, to the River Tass, and it's racing away through the farm under some of the bridges there.
Lovely. If I got closer to it, we could probably hear it. Yes, coming through here.
Yes, you can. Just over here, look, there's a lovely little waterfall there.
This is the first rain for a few weeks, isn't it? But actually, a lot of the damage of the drought has been undone.
Yes, and so the rain here is really very welcome this morning. And it should be wet more or less all day today. So we're getting well into February already. But that's a lovely sound. It's very peaceful. But sometimes when we have heavy rain, this turns into a raging torrent. And there's a lovely gravel bottom, and it's full of freshwater shrimp. Water voles on each side of the bank as well. Lots of little holes. There's holes over there, just on the other side. So lots of small mammals here as well. But I said we're going to be looking at flowers, and some of our trees actually come into flower at this time of the year. If we walk back a little bit, this is hazel, and it's in flower. It's quite surprising.
Oh yes, so we've got some buds here. Yes.
You get these catkins here, and amazing, I don't know if we can do it this morning because it's been some rain. If I just flick them with my finger, little puffs of pollen will fly off, and you'll get male and female parts coming into flower at the same time. So what we've discovered is trees with catkins on, things like sweet chestnut, alder,
birch as well. Hornbeam's another one. They all have catkins on, and they've developed much later than our flowering trees, so trees that have flowers in. So the catkin-bearing trees, much later, they've stopped flowering, if you like, and they're using wind pollination to do the work for them. But sometimes some of the trees that have catkins are pollinated by insects, and sweet chestnut I mentioned is one of those. But the catkins come into flower now at this time of the year because the trees, hazel that we're standing in front of, hasn't come into leaf yet. So the pollen can get spread freely on windy days. Whichever way the wind's blowing, that's the way the pollen goes. And the clever bit is the female part of the catkin, I'll just see if I can find one. There we are, just as a little bud just at the end with a bright red tip on it, all feathery. And that is the female part that will catch the pollen from the male catkins and actually fertilise. And here's another one right just there in front of you. Can you see?
Yes.
Little bright blood red.
So those are the female parts, and the male parts are the catkins.
That's it. And they produce absolutely masses and masses of pollen, which they have to, because it's quite a not a very precise process to get pollinated. And those, you can see there's two together there, the female parts, and that will produce a pair of hazelnuts later on. Now, we've had a question, and I'll let you read this out. And there's a photograph to go with it.
Photograph of something that looks like fungus to me. But anyway, Louise in Manchester is a loyal listener, she says. I don't have social media, but can Chris tell me this? It's a question about this fungi on a tree that I saw in a walk on the National Trust estate at Dunham Massey. Growing on the branches of a few different trees showed my husband, who thought it was a flower and not a mushroom. Can you tell us what it is?
Yes.
Well, it's sort of an orangey colour, isn't it? And to my untutored eye, that looks exactly like a fungus.
It is, and it's one of the top 100 in the UK, commonest fungi, and many of them, just bear in mind, there are around 10,000 species of fungi growing in the UK. I'm on first name terms with about 100 of them, and after that, I get a bit lost and have to look up the subjects. But it's really common, and one of its favourite hosts is, in fact, hazel. And I brought one along for you in the flesh to see. It's a piece of branch from underneath this tree, and it's a jelly fungus. And it's sort of, well, its name is yellow brain because of all the convolutions, all the folds on it. And if you just touch it, it's very sort of gelatinous,
yes,
and floppy as well. And it's just growing, and it loves this weather, this damp weather. The wetter the better for it. But like all fungi, they break down wood and kind of recycle it for others to use later on. But this fungi's a real odd creature.
Oh, we like the sound of him.
Because if you look at that picture that's been sent through very carefully.
Yes, this is Louise's picture.
You can see there's a crust underneath it.
Yes,
and that is another fungus called a pinifera. And this, here's the fungus underneath it. You can just see this white scaling underneath this yellow brain that's come out.
So that's a different species.
And it's a parasite of another fungus.
It's a fungus on a fungus.
Exactly that. It's just extraordinary once you learn about the world of nature. So there we are. You have a yellow brain fungus there. And its particular host is hazel. It will also grow on ash. There's lots of ash trees in front of us. Some with ash dieback, all the twigs are dropping on the woodland floor. And if we walked in there, well, it's very muddy at the moment. I forgot to give you your wellies. we would actually see this particular yellow brain fungus. It's one of the jelly species of fungus.
Very bright, almost fluorescent yellow. Yeah, that,
exactly. If you saw this in the sunshine, it's almost iridescent. It's really extraordinary colour. And if it starts to dry out, it will go dark orange. And part of the picture that has been sent to us, the fungus has started to dry out and it will go orange. And it can also dehydrate in dry weather. But then when you get rain, it rejuvenates. It's quite an amazing creature and very spectacular. So if you see a piece of wood with something bright yellow growing on it at this time of the year, it's one of those many species of jelly fungus. And this is another one, also from under this shrub.
Oh no, that's a different colour, isn't it? That's more a fawn sort of colour.
It is. It's called jelly ear now. It's changed its name recently. And you can see underneath there's all little folds, just like inside a
cube. That's a spectacular one there, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
Look at the size
and,
of that.
And it's a jelly fungus. It's brown. Its favourite host, it's part of the scientific name of it, is on elder. There's all sorts of different sizes of it there, but I don't ever eat these, although some people find jelly ear quite tasty. But it doesn't look, let's put it like this, it doesn't look appetizing.
I think the seps that you picked earlier in the year, yes, for the penny buns, they're much better.
You haven't forgotten that, have you? But nevertheless, surprising at this time of the year, because fungi are non-flowering plants, and yet this is the time of year many of our fungi flower. This is the part of their year that you actually see the visible part, and of course the wood inside here is the part of the host for the fungi where all the roots or the hyphae grow inside the wood, and it's there all the year round. But they just have a flowering period or a fruiting period from autumn in particular right through the winter until now. So there we are. There's always something to look and learn when you're out in the countryside. But now we're going to go and see some real flowers. We're coming well into February now, and so it's a great time of year. We'll just visit another part of the farm, so we'll hop back in the truck and see what we can see. Fingers crossed.
Some winter colour.
Yes.
We've still got rain, but not quite as bad as some parts of the country, so I suppose we are blessed to some degree. Now, we talked about the colours coming through and being a very welcome addition this time of the year with the flowers, but I suppose white, bright white is a colour?
Yes, of course, Matthew. And just over on our far right, we've come to a different area of the farm. This is quite a steep south-facing slope, and it's on sandy gravel. And the thing about sands in the countryside, the soil type, is it cools down very quickly in the winter. But once you get the sun, and we're getting about 23, 24 minutes a week, extra daylight now from Sunday to Sunday. So
I don't believe it in this
no,
weather.
No, it is. I know it looks grey and a bit miserable this morning, ooh, but that's good. It's what the season should be. And then when spring does come along, you appreciate it that much more. But over in the distance there are quite a large clump of many thousands of snowdrops.
Oh yes.
Yes, look
just
underneath there.
Isn't
it's
that wonderful?
Beautiful sight. Absolutely beautiful. Get them all over Norfolk and into Suffolk. One of my favourite places to see them is in the old ruined abbey walls at Walsingham there. And in the cross at Dunwich in Suffolk as well, there's an old monastery there, and they grow in the ruins there, and there are thousands of them, so they do grow frequently. There's a lot of argument as to whether they're actually natural to the UK countryside or whether they were imported and came in from France. So a lot of controversy still goes on, and of course it's very difficult when you go back into the 15 and 1600s to see what actually happened.
They don't get much more than 6 inches off the ground, and they're very demure, aren't
they? No, they are. The way the heads hang down, many of the Galanthus species are the same, all part of the snowdrop family. And of course they're really early. Some people call them snow piercers, but I think it was Thomas Tuckwell. He was an 18th century poet. He actually called them something which still makes me smile. He called it vegetable snow. And I love it. What a beautiful phrase to use, because
they are snowy white.
Yes, they absolutely are, and they're growing, of course, so they're vegetable snow, and I think that's great. Snowpiercer, again, as I mentioned, is another name for them. And we've got some fantastic displays in the woodland on the other side of the farm, and used to go and just walk down, and it kind of gladdens the spirits when you see them. And went one morning, and it's strange, there'd been some lorry tracks that had driven into the woodland in one of the old shooting rides and then stopped quite close to the centre of the woodland, and there must have been quite a lot of people involved with crates. And what they did is, in one night, they dug up over 1,000 clumps of snowdrops, put them in the crates, and then presumably potted them up, which you can do with snowdrops, and moved them whilst they're in flower. And we think they went down to London and were sold, and that's quite a lucrative night's work. And
completely illegal.
Yes, of course, there was no permission, and they must have worked hard. How they did it in the dark, I don't know, but it was at this time of the year, and nobody was ever caught and traced as a result of it. Just some evidence that they went down to London, down the A11. The lorry was seen.
So now you've put man traps around them.
No, but we do have cameras there the whole time now, just more so for the badgers and the deer, which you can enjoy on High Ash Farm Facebook. But I said I'd bring you some colour, although white is a colour, so snowdrops do qualify.
And they look really good there.
They're absolutely beautiful, aren't they? So if we just walk in a little bit on the edge of the wood, a south-facing little bank here in front of us, and you can see some bright, go down on my hands and knees, some bright pink flowers. So to find colour in the winter, you've got to sort of look carefully. And this one is absolutely gorgeous. It's bright pink. It's in full flower. Some of the flowers have already dropped on the ground. And it's called red dead nettle. And if it's got dead in the name, although it's a member of the nettle family, it doesn't sting. Unlike small nettles, there's Urtica urens, a species of dwarf nettle that grows here. And my sisters tell me small nettles don't sting. They made me get hold of them, and I found out the hard way. They do sting, but red and white dead nettle, they're absent of stings. So
there's some more here.
Yes, look at that. Absolutely beautiful. Once you see them, it's absolutely delightful. So everything's growing away, and of course it's a good time to flower because there's very little competition. Once you go into sort of April, May, and particularly June, everything's wanting to be pollinated, so there's a lot of competition. So if you do get mild winter stay, and of course we're having more and more of those at the moment, although it's colder today, it's a good chance they get pollinated and set seed early, and that then completes their life cycle. So really lovely to see. Anyway,
so they're red dead nettle.
Red, it's a dead nettle. Good one to watch out for. And these clumps over here in front of us, they're a similar relation. They're not in flower yet, but within a week they will be. They're white dead nettle. And used to pull the little flowers off, and they had a little nectary at the bottom of them, and you could actually suck the nectar out.
I'm sinking here. There's some rabbit holes.
Yes, rabbit holes, yes. Yes, look at that. That one's quite deep. We're actually on the edge of a warren here. And anyway, if we walk in a little bit, just be careful where you put your feet.
In we come. Yeah, into the woods.
Right, and we're a bit more sheltered here. You can see lots of digging activity there with the rabbits. The ground is actually raised up.
Looks like someone's formed an escape committee here.
And the whole of this area in front of us is of one species of plant, and it's reputed to be the most perfumed of all British wildflowers, and it's the sweet violet, Viola odorata. And I said I'd bring you some colour, and just look down here. I'm going to go down my hands and knees again. Look at this, in full flower,
absolutely beautiful.
Lovely, deep, rich purple. That,
yes, it is, yes. So there are around 13 species of pansy and violet in the UK.
And these are the wild equivalent of what I might buy in a garden
yes.
centre.
Yes, and this one, has the perfume is absolutely exquisite, even on cold days like this. It has a perfume, and it's so powerful, if you take a sniff, you can pick up the perfume, and then if you take another sniff, the perfume seems to have disappeared. And there's a chemical in the perfume, in the scent itself, which actually numbs your sense of smell, so you can't smell it anymore. It used to be used in medicine as well, and in cookery, in early cookery, to flavour dishes as well. And it's a lovely little plant, so it comes into flower really early, in February in particular, this month, and again in next month. And then, if it's not successful, it's got some tricks up its sleeve. It reproduces in three ways. Firstly, by producing seed from the flowers, which we've got here. And secondly, if I just scrape the leaf litter away, a bit like this, like that, you can see there's lots of long roots which come out from the base of the plant there, go across the ground. I'm following this one, 6 inches, 7 inches, and it's come to another plant, and it reproduces vegetatively like that.
So it spreads.
Look at this long root. In the air, no rootlets coming off it. As soon as it touches the ground, look, tug it, there it is, firmly on the bottom of that plant. And that's what's happened over here. It's spread over this whole area. It's what, 10 yards from top to bottom, and at least 20, 30 yards in length. And the whole thing, they're almost all joined together.
And at this time of the year, this plant is taking advantage. This is its time, isn't it? Because
yes.
There's so much more light coming
yes,
through.
Yes, of course.
There's no leaves.
And I did mention it's got three ways of distributing itself, rejuvenating itself, if you like. The first one by seed, we've always mentioned. The second one is by these long roots called stolons. And the third one is this then all grows up with stinging nettles and bluebells coming to flower, and the violets are only very diminutive down in the woodland floor. They get covered up, but the plant still produces flowers down there, but the flowers don't open. They self-pollinate, they have pollen in. Sometimes they have a little bit of nectar in as well, and they produce seed in there which pops open, and the seeds then drop on the woodland floor, and that's a special process called cleistogamy, and a flower that flowers but it never opens.
What's that? Cleistogamy?
Cleistogamy, yes. Yes.
Wow, wow.
So they're just amazing. So I just love all the things that I share on my farm. I think some of them are more adaptable than I am, and cleverer in many ways as well. So that's why I kind of almost worship the countryside. I'm learning so much that it just makes you feel very dwarfed by the power of nature sometimes.
And every species of animal, creature, birds, all the plants, they all have their own way of doing the same thing, which is surviving.
Exactly. And look over there, I hadn't seen that, just I've got wet knees now. This, a twig on the ground covered in pink spots, looks like me when I was a teenager. That's called coral spot, and it's a diminutive little pink fungus on beech twigs. There they all are.
So named for the colour.
Yes.
Pink corals.
Pink coral spot, and it's doing its job breaking down this dead twig that's on the woodland floor. There it is, twig all broken and dead, and sending it back to lovely leaf mould on the woodland floor. That's what fungi do, and then other plants grow up from this lovely woodland soil here. So there you are, we all learn something every day. So cleistogamy, new word, good one for Scrabble if you can pop that one in.
You see, you knew that this was a useful podcast when it aids the Scrabble. Back in the farmyard now, and we're heading towards your home here, Chris. Does that mean I'm going to be allowed inside out of the rain?
I think I might make us both a coffee.
We've been suffering for our art form this morning, and so I think we'll, as long as you trust me with my cooking abilities, in we go. This is heaven. It's the name of my house. I didn't name it. The builders and the plasterers sat on this step and had a panoramic view of Norwich in front of us. And the sun was shining and looked over all the woodland here. And more than one person, including the electrician who wired it all out for me, said, "This is heaven." And that's how it got its name.
I'll take these shoes off because they're a bit muddy.
Yes.
And you'll see now I've got odd socks.
I'm not having you. So you have. How odd. Right, I'm just going to put the kettle on.
And we're going to look at those questions.
Yes. Just give it a minute or two to boil.
Oh, that's a lovely cup of tea, Chris.
Excellent.
Well done.
Thank you very much. Yes.
I think we've found your talent now.
Yes, I had a nickname. I used to do cooking years ago and still do, and it was called Alfred back then. So, because King Alfred sort of burnt the cakes, didn't he? And there we are. But anyway, I've improved a lot since then. So I've got a coffee, you've got a cup of tea, and we're sitting in my living room. There's a big fireplace here with a log burner going and two little fans on top of the log burner, which power themselves. Very clever, and it's throwing the warm air out. And I designed the chimney stack when the builders were building it. About 12 bags of vermiculite insulation arrived to put round the chimney to insulate the whole chimney stack, because it's about 8 feet wide, big beam over the top. And I said, "What are you doing with that?" He said, "We're going to insulate your chimney." And I said, "No, you're not. You're going to fill that with concrete." And they looked at me and shrugged their shoulders. "Well, whatever." He said, "You're paying." So the whole of that in there is solid concrete. And that log burner heats up that concrete as the heat goes up the chimney. And 2 days later, you put your hand on the chimney breast, it's still warm, and it's like a huge night storage radiator. Learned about those because my father bought some for the farmhouse, two downstairs, and they had big concrete blocks in there with air in the concrete, and that used to last during the daylight, so I copied that. And then you'll see a little fan above the ceiling here, because the ceilings are quite high. They're about 8 feet up, and I can turn a little switch on in my kitchen and take the warm air out of here and transfer it through into the kitchen.
So these are the benefits of designing your own home from home,
yes,
especially for your needs.
Yes, years of experience. Anyway, we've got some questions in front of us, but Matthew, if you just look out at the view, we're high up, one of the second highest spots of the county of Norfolk, and we look down over Norwich. It's a bit grey and drizzly, but just in the distance is a black building. It's just hidden up behind one of the trees there, and it did have sails on in the early 1900s, or more or less in the centre of Norwich, and it's on Eleanor Road.
And this corresponds to a note we've had from David Cutting, and he's been regularly listening to the podcast. He says, "I knew Chris when he was 19, back when High Ash was a dairy farm. I used to work for Woodrose on Eleanor Road and used to bring the animal feed in Norwich. I knew Chris and his father. I'm now 84. I've seen Chris at the farm when I went to see the wildlife. He'd always be around for a chat. It's a lovely place and it's nice to hear his voice. I don't have a car, I have a scooter, and it's a bit too far to travel these days, but it's nice still to hear about the farm."
Yes, and what a memory. It used to go up once a week if the lorry was late delivering. My father would have turkey food, chicken food, pig food delivered every week, and the most bulky food was perhaps sugar beet pulp nuts from Woodrose, right in the centre of Norwich there on Eleanor Road, and then flaked maize as well, which we call Koshitosh. It looked exactly like Kellogg's cornflakes. Other cornflake makes are available, but it was squashed out flat, and bran as well, and then dairy nuts full of fish meal, and it had a particular smell. It wasn't unpleasant, but that gave the high protein content for the animals to fatten up here or to produce the milk, and it was all mixed and blended in that big black mill you can see almost in the centre of Norwich there. And yes, I used to go there regularly and fill the back of the car up when I was very young, and then later became a customer. And then they used to deliver the food here for my pigs, which I kept. And we're actually in a former pigsty, Matthew.
No, really?
It is. The old divisions are still there all the way down the wall, the garden wall. There's one there and another one just there behind us. And that divided up the pig pens, which are all 10 feet exactly wide and 20 feet across. They were quite large pigsties. Still is. I know what you're going to say.
Well, thanks very much for that question. And let's move on to a note from Richard Walsley, who says, "Hi, Chris. I've recently been hearing this very subtle bird calling in the very early evenings. I live on the edge of Delamere Forest, which is in Cheshire." So let's have a listen to the sound that's been sent in. This is what Richard heard. And Richard goes on to say, "I've Googled the sound. The pattern seems right for snipe, but the tone is different. Hope you can hear it okay, as well as the owl right at the end." So what do you think, Rick?
Right, I listened very carefully and a big smile came over my face. I would have loved it to have been a snipe. Galligano, galligano, one of those little birds. It doesn't make a sound by calling, like a lot of birds do, or singing. It has a tail, and on the outside of the tail of the snipe are two very stiff feathers that stick out. And the snipe, when it's doing its sort of ceremonial or trying to attract a female, flies up in the air and then kind of flies down to the ground at great speed and spreads its tail. And these little outer tail feathers vibrate, and called drumming. And that's the sound that our correspondent thought that he could hear. Because if you play it to Google, Google will think, that's a snipe. But A, it's the wrong time of year. And on the edge of forest, it's unlikely to be that. And it is way too early for snipe to be drumming. So listen carefully. There's an owl at the end, which gives the clue away. The owl is a male tawny owl. And earlier on, just a few seconds before the owl makes its traditional sound, which we know, the owl was warbling, and it sounds exactly like a snipe drumming, I must admit, but it's a male tawny owl, and he's serenading his lady friend by going, it's a bit like that, and whereas a snipe drumming goes like that. So very distinctive, different sounds, but without a doubt, it's a male tawny owl actually wooing his lady.
On last week's edition of the Countryside podcast, we were out and about in nighttime hours, our evening safari, and Julian Halesworth says he really enjoyed the programme. But when we got to the barn owl that we saw, we were most astonished to see a barn owl hovering above the fields doing some nighttime hunting. He says he was a bit surprised, or perhaps he missed something about the barn owl. As Julian says, he has seen this happen quite often in the past.
Yes, and I see barn owls hovering on a regular basis when they're hunting. Generally, the hovering, if they spot prey in some long tussocky grass underneath them, they will hover just for a few seconds and then pop their wings upright above their head and drop down. But this barn owl was hovering for a really protracted length of time. It was 10, 20, 30 seconds at a time without moving. We had trouble identifying it as a barn owl because when it was hovering, its head was facing downwards and we were head on to the barn owl. So it looked like a thin wedge. And all I could see was the tail wavering from side to side to keep the bird absolutely stationary. So it was using the wind. Instead of moving forwards, it was flying against the wind, but not moving an inch. And I'd never seen a barn owl hovering for that length of time. Then it moved to another site and repeated it. And it's only when it flew over to the next little hunting spot that we could see the white underneath, because it looked, to all intents and purposes, exactly like a kestrel.
Stephen lives in the Broadland area of Norfolk at Acle, and he's sent in a photograph. He says, hello, Chris and Matthew. Friday was sunny here in Acle, and it brought our first butterfly of the year. A butterfly having a sunbathe. Not seen a brimstone yet, though. Have you seen any butterflies on High Ash this year? And there's the photograph. Oh, my goodness, that is an early sighting, isn't it?
Yes, and I was quite shocked to see this. I had expected a peacock butterfly, perhaps a brimstone, although our correspondent seems to know that a brimstone's sort of rather sulphur yellow in colour and the females are paler. But it's nonetheless, it's a red admiral butterfly, which is basically a migrant species, comes up from southern France. We've had some northerly winds recently, and it looks a little bit worse for wear. So what I think's happened is it's hibernated here over the winter months, and there's increasing evidence as our winters get warmer that migrant butterflies are surviving. Things like painted ladies, and certainly this one, the red admiral. Again, all our butterfly species, the more spectacular they are, they got these very flamboyant names. So monarch, sort of red admiral, peacock, have all got these lovely names. And the brimstone, which we're watching out for every day now, is one of the first butterflies to come out of hibernation. It's called brimstone because of the sulphur colour on the top of the male wings, and it really looks like flying sulphur, brimstone. And we think that's, well, it's the colour of butter, and we think brimstones gave the general name for butterflies. It's butterflying.
And talking about similar sort of colour, we've had some images, pictures sent from Joseph and Catherine, who live in Northumberland. Headley on the Hill is where we find these pictures of yellowhammers. So thank you for sending those in. What do you think? There's a lovely bright spot of colour in there.
Yes, they're all males there. There's four or five males on the picture. It's on some quite tight, dense shrubbery there. And it's a lovely sight. And I hope again in the next week or two, the yellowhammers are now flocking here at High Ash Farm to get you in my yellowhammer hide. And so we can have a really close view of the males. Each week that goes past, the males become more and more yellow, and that's a bit that's attractive for the females. So now they start to flock up and choose a mate, so that they'll pair up and form their own territory in the next few weeks.
We're almost done for this week's Countryside podcast. If you'd like to send Chris a message, question, comment, anything you like, chris@countrysidepodcast.co.uk. And there's also a rather nice poster that people have been putting on their walls. And thank you to Christopher Truman, who sent a note saying, here's a photograph of Chris's wonderful Countryside podcast poster, which is now adorning the wall on the Market Drayton Library notice board, where Chris and rats will be noticed by everyone.
Well done, and thank you very much for spreading the word. Hope you enjoy our little visit for winter flowers this week. And we're finishing off in the warmth, and it's an absolute delight to share the countryside at this time of year.
I know you're busy on the farm, so you can get off, do what you need to do, and I'll just stay here in front of the fire.
You want another cup of tea then?
Oh, yes. And any biscuits?
Oh, no, that's pushing the boat out.
This is a Soundyard production. Music is by Tom Harris.